Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. I'm Chance Ellison.
And I'm Russell Howe.
And welcome to the Choice by Chance, the audio edition where we do all movie reviews. And we are nearly done with Legacy Sequel Movie March. And we're going to a realm that honestly nobody really ever wanted to go down, but they did it anyway. Blues Brothers 2000.
Yep, that happened.
It did happen. Before we get, what we'd like to do is we'd like to talk about the original going all the way back to 1980 with the original Blues Brothers. How do you feel about the original Blues Brothers, Russell?
It's okay. I mean, I thought it was, funny. I liked Belushi and Aykroyd, like how they acted off one another. I mean, I thought it was fine.
Yeah. I'm the opposite of you, because I love the original. I think the original is incredible. I think it's funny. It's creative. It's a musical. It's got car chases. It's about as perfect a comedy as you can get. And it's one that I think gets better the more I watch it. Mm-hmm. Regardless of what you think of the original Blues Brothers, everyone can agree Blues Brothers 2000 fucking sucks.
And it didn't even come out in 2000.
It didn't. That's how we know we're already on a bad path. Like this came out in 1998, not 2000, because I guess Y2K paranoia was at an all time high. I don't know why they called it 2000. I don't know why they called it this.
Just call it Blues Brothers 98, man.
Okay, may as well. But this was essentially a desperate ploy by writer and director Dan Aykroyd and John Landis to recapture the glory days while bringing us none of the glory. None of the glory.
Just the days.
There is so little that goes right with this. We're not gonna sugarcoat it. This is a bad movie. This might be the worst movie we reviewed this whole month.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
What's wrong with this film? Well, I mean, it's easier to answer what's right with this film, but let's get into it. This is Blues Brothers 2000. So, in case, a little recap of the first. The first was basically about two men, two blues musicians, who on a very spiritual redemption quest, who end up becoming the most wanted men in America. This picks up nearly 20 years later, as we meet our main character, Elwood J. Blues, being released from the events of the first film. And I will say, it starts off very nice, very subtle, very atmospheric, but don't get used to that. It doesn't last too long.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's cool how they kind of have it though, with like him getting released from prison and very like no words spoken, just very quiet.
It's very much like an homage to the first film, the way it plays out like this. We meet our main character, Elwood J. Blues, played by Dan Aykroyd. As we see another one of several returning cast members from the first film, Frank Oz, who's now the warden of the prison. He was a guard in the first one. He's now the warden. As he tells Elwood the news of his brother, we find out that Jake passed away in prison. Somehow, we never find out why. Drug overdose in prison? I don't know. They never tell us.
He just had to be dead.
He just had to be. He just had to be for the story.
Yeah.
He waits outside for a friend or friend to come pick him up. I forgot her name. I cannot remember this girl's name.
I know who you're talking about. It's the, I don't remember.
It doesn't matter.
Her.
Yeah, her. So, her comes to pick her up.
She's a dancer.
Yeah, she is. We know that for sure, but, what the hell is her name? Yeah, it doesn't matter. I'm not gonna dwell on it. It does not matter. He then goes back to see the nun from the first movie, as we find out who else died since the last time we saw him, because Curtis, Cab Calloway's character, also passed away, as Cab Calloway, I think, was dead by the time this came out.
I think so.
Yeah, let me check. I'm actually not 100% positive. Yes, he was. He was dead. He was dead at the time this came out. So yeah, he passed away too. But then they do the thing that annoys the shit out of me in sequels. We find out that in the first film they were working to save an orphanage, the child at home. This one we find out again, they did. They got the money. They paid it off. We get to this one. We find out the orphanage closed anyway.
So he completely undid everything that the first one
said. Isn't that nice? Knowing that everything the first one was working for was totally in vain.
Yeah. Stupid.
Yeah, like it's It's just the thing that I hate the sequels do. It's like another comedy sequel did this, ironically enough, Zoolander 2, where we find out like the first like 5 minutes that the school that Zoolander worked so hard to build just like cratered into the ocean anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's like, why even put it in? Like, why that's even do it? Stupid.
Yeah. And I think he says in the line, we're just like, I got no Jake. I got no Curtis. I got the orphanage is gone. I got no life. I got nothing. Just like, and yet you're still making the movie anyway.
Yeah, and roll final credits.
just like, well, you summed it all up right there. I don't know why we're here.
Yep.
But we then meet a new character, who, the movie feels like it was made for this target audience. A child, Buster. He's an orphan. High risk, and the sister's just like, hey, you know what? Why don't you go pair? Why don't we pair this kid with you, recently released felon?
Yeah, because that doesn't throw any red flags up.
Yeah, that pairing makes sense.
Sure.
Something else you also notice in the beginning of this film, where like, because like you watched both recently, right?
Yeah.
Actually, so did I. Dan Aykroyd's Chicago accent in the first one, it's playfully over the top, but yeah, playfully exaggerated. Here, it sounds like it sounds like it's coming from a cartoon.
Yeah, it's like almost like Yogi Bear.
It almost is like Yogi Bear, when I think about it. Which is ironic, because his Yogi Bear is like not very good. Weirdly enough, but like Dan Aykroyd's Yogi Bear is not very good.
That's really kind of why I thought of it.
Yeah. But anyways, we find out that Curtis in the first one had a son who has no idea Curtis is his father. So he goes to see him to try and get money to buy a new car. And the kid tags along with him because like he can't shake the kid. He can't shake him. And just like, look, kid, you don't want to hang out with an old guy like me. It's like, neither does the audience.
Yeah, and then he just appears again. It's like
out of nowhere, like Batman.
It's like Tron, where she's just outside at the end.
Yeah, she's just there. She's like, we don't know where he came from. He's just there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we meet the son, played by the only person I actually like in this movie, Joe Morton, mostly because I like him as an actor.
Yeah.
But like, you know, he's one of the guys where, like, you see him in the movie, just like, oh. That's what an actor does. But yeah, so he just like, no, I'm not doing this. He throws Elwood out of the police station. Oh, we forgot to mention he is a cop. He's, I think, police chief, if not mistaken.
Yeah, something like that.
Something high ranking. But he gets thrown out, and but the good news is Buster did steal. Well, I don't know if it's good news, but Buster did steal his wallet. So they have just enough money to buy the new Bluesmobile. Remember this scene, because I do have a tangent about it later. I will circle back to this scene with him stealing the wallet later. So anyways, they go and buy their new car, and that's where we meet the newest addition to the Blues Brothers, Mac, played by John Goodman in what I do believe is the first film of his we've ever talked about.
Yeah.
I can't think of another John Goodman we would have done, so I think this is the first.
Would have to be, unless he was nothing that he led, obviously, and he'd have to be a small side character. Yeah. Nothing with the Coen brothers.
No. Oh, wait, no, we did do Barton Fink. We did do
Barton Fink. Fink. There you have it. Yeah.
Okay, so there. So not the first one we did. I forgot we did that one. But yeah. Point is, John Goodman is in this, yeah. And you know, John Goodman, Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi, they were like all good friends in real life. He actually played with the Blues Brothers several times in real life. Here's the problem, though. He plays his character, Mighty Mac McTeer. He has no fucking personality.
No, it's yeah, there's zero, yeah.
There's like zero defining characteristics about him, zero personality with Elwood. Like, yeah. They don't even look each other in the face half the time.
Yeah, it's like, how are these guys? Yeah.
Like, this is supposed to be the replacement for John Belushi. There is nothing discernible about this dude.
No, I mean, it's very flat, very vanilla. Yeah, and then you're supposed to believe that these guys have chemistry enough to go ahead and
go on
a mission or whatever. Yeah, it's just it's kind of far fetched.
Yeah, just like and John Goodman's we talk about Barton Fink. John Goodman's a fucking great actor.
Yeah,
and he's giving them nothing. You
know, this is just a paycheck. This movie, I mean, it's you know, you could kind of tell, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel that. I mean, it feels like part homage, part homage, part respect, part, you know, like I'm doing this as a favor, but also like yeah, like John Goodman's a great actor, and you're giving him nothing to work with, and it's sad because this could have been good.
And especially how awful the dance moves are.
Yeah, that too.
Oh my god, it's like a kid choreographed it. It's awful.
Yeah, I mean, he can sing. He's a good singer.
Oh no, don't get me wrong. Definitely got like the bluesy voice when he sings.
Yeah.
But yeah, just not. Yeah, the dancing is just so bad.
Yeah, like dancing bad, but like more over. Like whereas the Jake Elwood dynamic was so fantastic in the first film.
Yeah.
This is just nothing.
No, it's like it's everything the first movie like set up and it was made for. It's just kind of undone again, and just very, you just don't buy the chemistry between the characters. It's just it's two adult men with a kid, and it's just like I don't know. You just don't buy any of it.
Yeah, anyways, they meet him at Willie's club. Willie was the drummer from the first film. We find out that the club is being shaken down by Illinois Russians. Russians, because you know we can't use the Nazis anymore. But like, come on, Illinois Nazis, that just rolls off the tongue. Illinois Russians, yeah, it just feels desperate.
Yeah, you might as well have had like Italian mobsters, man.
The Illinois Mafia, that would have been fine.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, Capone was big in Chicago. You know,
that's true.
Valentine's Day Massacre. I mean, it's just, it's stupid to, like, it's so far-fetched, man. It's like you're putting the Cold War in Chicago. It's just, it's so, it's just not good.
Yeah, but anyways, so they end up drinking two Russians, like, you know, getting them blackout drunk and stealing their clothes because, you know, they're shaking in the club. They decided to, you know, like, get a little bit of payback on them. They somehow think this won't lead to worse things happening down the road.
Yeah, that nobody will obviously know or find out about what happened, you know.
Yeah, but big shocker! The Illinois Russians came back and they are pissed.
Of course.
Yeah, they decided to shoot up the club and burn it down. This is where we gauge into little bit of a car chase, not much, but you know, close, feel like a watered down version of the original. Because the original, the car chases in that movie were amazing. Yeah. This one, again, have a tangent about that later. The funny thing about, I don't know if you noticed this one. You know, it's like the part where like they threw down the nails and the car like flew into the air. Did you ever notice that they end up like several feet behind where they originally launched?
Really? I did not notice that. I just
like,
was
if you
like,
go back and look, like, because like they cut back to a couple angles, them flying in front of the club. Okay. Like they hit the nails, they fly up, and then like in an opposing shot, they're right back behind the club again. It's just like, wait, no, how did that work? How did you do that?
I was just shaking my head like, nails will not have done it like that.
That wouldn't have happened, no.
Not to that extent.
But, Russell, it's after this where we get the one visual that absolutely just destroys this movie. It's on the scene where they decide to go off on their little quest. They get to the front of a Mercedes-Benz dealership. And we see the visuals of, you know, Mac and Elwood, of course, they're in the Blues Brothers gear. But we also see the kid has his own suit.
Of course he does.
Because he's part of the band now, too. And that's the one thing that just absolutely, for me, just destroys this movie.
Well, yeah, now you're making it a family movie. Like, you're making it more like of a kid's film, too, now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but, like, it's like the Blues Brothers, again, like, people forget, like, the first Blues Brothers was rated R, and it was, like, a very earned R, because they did, you know, they cursed a lot of suggested material, drugs, all that stuff. This one, I didn't realize was rated PG-13.
Yeah, I remember seeing this one in the theater, it came out in 98.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I saw this one before I saw the original, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I was 15 when this came out. So this was...
You're asking me?
No, I was 15 when this came out, and I'm like, I mean, this was... entertaining enough, I guess, when I was 15.
But yeah, like, I think like any shred of credibility, any shred of edge, any shred of badassery, that goes immediately out the window the second you put that goddamn kid in a suit.
Well, yeah, now you've made it inclusive now that what you've built up in the first movie with these, like, two badass blues guys, you know what I mean, on a mission from God, and now it's like, now you kind of just make it like you almost kind of make fun of it. You know, everything that you worked for in that first film, you've kind of undone now.
And but also, like, the thing they're talking about in the scene is that they only respond to, you know, like, loot and intimidation. But, like, you are saying all this as you have the 10-year-old kid with you.
Yeah, and then on top of it, like, John Goodman's character, I believe, smiles. It's the thing that Elwood said not to do, and I believe like John Goodman's character did when they went into the police office. I think.
Yeah,
yeah. And again, it's just not. I don't know, man. It's just.
Like this is like giving the Punisher a kitten. Like it's just like no, like it just detracts from so much of the badass nature of the film. It's just like, why even include that? And again, I will have a whole tangent on Buster later in the review. Yeah. But it's like it's just such a pointless inclusion, and I just can't stand it.
Yeah, and the other reason is like maybe if you didn't even have his character in there, you can make this movie R.
Well, again, I'll get to that later. But anyways, they find out that yeah, this is a dealership owned by one of the former band members, Matt McIntyre Murphy. Blue Lumarini, saxophone also works there. And we get basically it was a repeat of a scene from the first film because in the first film Matt Murphy was married to Aretha Franklin. Turns out, and you know, he left to go join the band back. Turns out whatever happened off screen, they rekindled that romance. They were doing pretty well for themselves. And saying like, look, you know, I got to go and do this thing. He's like, okay. But she doesn't say okay. She doesn't want him to go. But then they go into, like the first one, they go into blindly to a musical number and they have to argue their way out of it.
Well, you have to. And
yeah.
You know, you have to have respect, you know?
Yeah. But like the thing about this one is that like where the first one was kind of funny and just how random and out of nowhere the musical numbers were.
This is like forced. Here, this is more forced.
What I hear, like it's just a repeat of the scene we've already done before. Like we know they're going to join the band and we know what song they're going to do. So like it just feels like a slower, less energized version of the scene we've already had.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyways, yeah. So she of course yields. Matt Murphy and Blue Lou go and join the band. And that's another thing. Whereas the first one, like the acting, okay, the acting wasn't the greatest, but you can kind of excuse it because of all the things going on around it.
Yeah, this acting's here. Bad.
Yeah, the bands are not good actors.
No, I mean it's like nobody has chemistry together at all.
They don't. Like the scene in the radio station.
Yeah, really bad.
Some of the most like flat delivery I've seen that we've seen on the show in a while. Now I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, this has been. I mean, this is probably one of the worst ones that we've done in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, like movie wise overall.
Yeah, you're probably right. But anyways, they go and recruit the guy from the radio station. They get Mr. Fabulous back, who's now working as a funeral director. Maitre d' in the first one, funeral director here. Don't know how that transition goes, but here we are. And then they go recruit their last member, Murph, who's working at I think it's like a phone sex line, isn't it?
It is a phone sex line, and I do like this number though. It is kind of funny.
The thing, like, I don't think the numbers are bad. The thing, like, I don't think the numbers are bad. Like, they're not bad songs; they're good renditions done by talented artists. But the thing is, I think that like they're too close together.
Yeah, I do like this one better though.
I do too. Yeah. I think the numbers are too close together. Whereas, like, you know, and they don't really tie in anything. Like, granted, in the first one, the musical numbers did not tie in anything, but you at least had other stuff. You had like car chases, a homicidal fiance, cops that were really funny. Again, all surrounded by a spiritual quest from God.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to get into right now because, like, there's something very like vital is missing in this one.
Yeah.
And that's that there is no reason to get the band back together this time.
No, and there's no mention of God at either, though.
There isn't.
There is.
The phrase in the first one was, we're on a mission from God. Yeah, here is the Lord works in mysterious ways.
But not often, though, is the thing. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah.
But like, here's my thing. Like, why are they doing this?
I mean, there is no...
Like in the first one, like it was like this whole like spiritual quest, a kind of like weird, like bizarre redemption, like two guys who had done like who had just had like a history of just like doing like really bad, really morally questionable things,
redeeming
who
themselves.
Have a chance to redeem themselves by trying to go and earnestly and honestly earn money to save their childhood home.
Yeah.
That's why there's such urgency for like these band members to go and join them because they're also like all working like really dead end crappy jobs. So, like, yeah, it makes sense why they would leave to go and join Elwood and Jake on their quest.
These guys all have careers now. I mean,
that's the thing. Like, they all have careers. They all have like well paying jobs. they even have like wives and stuff. Like, why would any of them leave this behind?
Just for because of the sake of the movie. We don't have a movie if this doesn't happen. I mean, but that's the thing. Like, if that's why you're setting it up, does it need to be rehashed? Do we need to do it? You know what I mean? Do we need to do it?
Do we need to do it? Like, the thing, like, that's the whole, that's one of my biggest problems with this film. Like, they never take the time to justify their reason for existing.
No, I mean, we're led to believe that they have to get to bit for what, though?
For what? For what?
They don't have to.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah, that's one of my biggest annoyances with this film. Yeah, like, there is just no reason to get the band back together.
No, I mean, it's not, there's no explanations, there's no nothing. We're just supposed to go on this journey for what reason, you know?
Yeah. Not to mention, and even then, like, the band just looks old, tired, not invested. Like, I always think of one line. It's, like, when they're at the motel where, like, Murph, the guitar guy, is just, like, the keyboard. It's like, haven't played a county fair since 68. And like, and Mr. Fabric comes in and he just says, sounds like a lot of laughs. It's like, what was the joke? What was the joke there?
There was no laughs. Like, I don't know. That's the problem with
the movie. This movie is just not funny.
Yeah. It tries way too hard to be funny, but it's not like, I don't know. It's just not, it just strikes out.
It doesn't work. Like a lot of the subtle jokes, they don't work. The over the top jokes don't work. Like, none of the I think I laughed maybe twice in this entire movie.
Yeah, there's probably a couple scenes I laughed, and I don't really remember them when we just watched this movie, and I kind of already forgot about them.
Yeah, again, we also get like hit with another musical number played by Blues Traveler, a band I actually quite like,
which is they're a fantastic band, by the way.
They are. I do like Blues Traveler. But it's just like, we just had musical number, guys. Why are we doing this again?
And it's crazy. Let it be known that also they also made a cameo at the end of the 1996 film Kingpin, where they sang. Right. But anyway, that was a great song. But you got to remember that Blues Travelers were real big in '94. That CD, the green CD with the cat on it, four fantastic. The thing that kind of like annoys me is the fact that like John Popper, the lead singer, says, "Oh yeah, we've been working on a song. We'd like you guys."
Oh yeah, it's like, "Why don't you come listen to us?" And it's like, "Okay, yeah, sure." And then they just leave.
It's like, dude, these guys are an established band already. They have hits out already. You know, this is Runaround's already came out. Like, I'm not saying again, but just in general though, timeline wise, you know, Hook came out.
Run around Hook.
I mean, great songs, and it was a very, very well received album. I think it did really well. It put them on the map, and that's just kind of crazy that you wouldn't. That would be cool if they were like an addition to the band. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. It's just like they don't even care enough to like stick around for the musical number, but they're still bombarding it with us anyway.
With cameo though, and that's the thing though. Like, I get all the old school cameos, you know, your BB Kings and all that stuff. I understand that, and it makes sense. But this would be kind of cool. To kind of like new, I guess that I would say like new age, like the newer music at the time, kind of incorporate with blues because they're kind of bluesy too, you know. I mean, I don't know. I just think it's just kind of like a missed opportunity.
We did forget to mention B.B. King did have a cameo at the beginning as owner of the lot, Gaspro.
That's why I said it.
We did. Yeah, forgot to mention that because we didn't. Because it does come back later. Weirdly enough, he's going to start his own blues band. So yeah, we do mention that for later. Oh, but anyway, so yeah, they're going off. They're doing their thing. They're trying to get to a gig. When we find out from the sisters that there is a rumor going around, or there's a report going around that Elwood has kidnapped Buster.
I mean, again, this is like so far fetched. Like,
but it's also like you could like pretty much clear this up, just like tell him he's not kidnapping the boy. But now I'm thinking about it, isn't he?
Well, I mean. Couldn't Elwood just check in and say, hey, by the way, like, he's with me, he's okay. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. But just like, maybe he's kind of kidnapping the kidnapper.
Realistically, he's not checking in or contacting anybody and saying, hey, we're okay. I mean, you're just kind of running away with this child and going to different cities from where obviously he's at. So, yeah, I mean, I can see a little bit of kidnapping there too.
They get cornered by cops at a cafe, and then we just get like really like weird. over the top, not funny escape scene that involves him, like, involves Elwood getting his head covered by shaving cream, like thinking,
where he's like, he thinks he has like some kind of, and that's the other one. Like, John Goodman's good at over the top acting.
He is,
but this is just so dumb.
This joke is just not funny. Where it's just like, it's like the whole joke is he comes out of saying he's having an attack. Is that the thing? Like, he's like epileptic, yeah. But his face is like, all covered in shaving cream. It's just, it's like the visual's not funny. The cop's reaction isn't funny because they're just like standing there watching.
And how the hell can he see driving?
Well, that's the thing. They go out in the parking lot and just do like donuts for 2 minutes. It's like, and while the cops still do nothing, it's just like, okay.
You can easily shoot the tires out right now. I'm like, this is like silly. It's silly. Yeah. It's really silly.
Yeah, it's silly, but it's also like not, like, you can be silly and be funny, but it's just not funny.
Yeah.
But anyways, they drive off and they set up a blockade along the river.
Yeah, another far-fetched. Oh my god!
But I can't even hear the thing.
So bad, so
the way
bad.
This goes, because like you think, like, okay, we're gonna get some like really cool driving skills to get him out of the situation. Nope. No, what they do is they drive their car into the river.
Yeah, we're Oregon trailing this thing.
You feel me? And then they drive out on the. They're driving under. We seem driving underwater, and then they just drive out on the other side.
And then the water doesn't come into the car at all.
The car doesn't break. Just like, sure.
Like, the water would be rushing through the vents and they wouldn't be able to do this. Like, again, you could do the suspension of, you know, belief, but it's like, oh my lord, it's just so bad.
Like, where at least the first blue felt like it kind of played in the real world. This feels like a blue of the cartoon. And like, this is not the last time this feels like movie feels like super cartoony.
No, it reminds me almost kind of like it reminds me kind of like SpongeBob. When they're driving, I mean, it's just something I can see on SpongeBob. I don't know. It's just not a not funny version of it. It's just so bad.
Yeah, but anyways, right after that, they end up at a rally for what state even is this?
Oh my lord,
Alabama.
Is it
Tennessee? It's somewhere down south. Anyway, they end up at a. I don't know, some kind of white supremacist rally. They end up like taking a boat full of explosives out of the water.
Again, why do we have this like white supremacist? Why do we have this?
It adds to nothing.
And a good old Daryl Hammond has to like.
It was Daryl Hammond. You're right.
Daryl Hammond's like the leader. You know, obviously SNL alum Daryl Hammond, like Bill Clinton,
Sean Connery.
Sean Connery, fantastic. Just really bad. Just so yeah,
like,
you
know, like, the whole thing is like they drive out of the water with the boat on top of the car. They just drive off. The boat just launches into the air for no reason.
Like Go-Go Gadget legs and just like and then just like does that stupid like cartoonish or like is like almost like Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner or some stupid stuff like that. You know,
it's like that. It's like Acme designed this boat.
Yeah, and then it just crashes down.
It just crashes down. Explodes. The whole party explodes and like. That's it. Just like, oh,
it's like, okay. Those guys are like dead now. Like it's so, but again, it's just so dumb. It's just stupid.
Yeah. Anyway, they get to the county fair. Elwood has to hide inside the car, which you see the way because like they pull down like
yeah. Where's he hiding in the glove box?
On the dash. I'm just like, how is he doing this?
He have to be under the hood.
Or it's in the engine compartment,
like through the glove. Box compartment.
This whole visual doesn't work. But like this is weird. So like, anyways, Elwood tells him to find a place to park. The band is setting up, and then again, they're bringing out like a country fair type of thing. So they have like a monster truck rally. So like, they're setting up. They're posing as a bluegrass band. I forgot to mention that.
Oh yeah, they're like the Bluegrass Brothers. The
Bluegrass Brothers.
Yeah. Again, bluegrass is huge. So stupid, but no, but just how they could find it, they could just like use their name and make it bluegrass.
But anyways, they're trying to find a place to park. They're setting up, and then out of nowhere, their car is on fire and they're on a loop, and they crash into the gig. But they don't take any time, don't show us anything to explain how the hell this happened.
Yeah, just not good. I do want to say the one thing I do enjoy though. Are the scenes where they're doing that, where they have to do that like parking real quick? You know what I mean? Where they pull out in front of a building. I do like that. I think that's kind of
the whole, the whole U-turn.
The U-turn type thing. Yeah.
We can't give this movie credit for that, because that was the thing that started from the first film.
I know, but I think it's funny, though. It is
nice. Just, like, that's the thing. That's my annoyance with this film, of course. Like, how did we get from here to here? Is my question. Like, how did we go from trying to find a place to park to being in a car on fire in a loop-de-loop?
And how do we get into a concert that's downpouring rain with the heavens opening up? Like,
oh yeah, no.
Yeah, really?
Anyways, they get on stage, they start playing, and start singing about the song is "Ghost Riders in the Sky," and then out of nowhere, like these like animated skeleton horses and cowboys like start coming up through the heavens.
It reminds me, it reminds me of the Highwaymen. Like the Highwaymen band, with Johnny Cash. Oh, the Highwaymen
video.
Yeah, the Highwaymen, with Johnny Cash and those guys. It kind of reminds me of the music they're trying to go for here, like outlaw music. Yeah,
and it actually is. This is based on a song by I don't know who sang the original. I think it was Stan Jones, if not mistaken. But I think Stan Jones wrote the song. I don't know who originally performed it. But anyways, but the whole thing is like, what am I looking at? It's just the same Blues Brothers.
No, this is just like we've gone like Rogue Renegade. Like, I don't know. I feel like this should be like Walk the Line or something. You know,
it's like a cartoony version of Walk the Line. Like, I don't know how we got. It's like Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. Took it some more seriously than this.
Dewey Cox has got to be coming out at the fair.
Yeah, I mean he's probably next.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It starts pouring rain, which really does not affect any of the equipment that they're using.
Nobody is worried about getting electrocuted.
Nope. I mean, look, I know Prince did this, but even then it was risky.
And then, you gotta love the remote control car.
Remote control car, because the Bluesmobile is designed by fucking Batman, I guess.
It's a $500 car.
But they
was Alfred like, here?
Who was running this thing? Phineas Flynn? Like, what the fuck?
Just not, yeah.
Anyways, they manage to escape, and they see that morale is kind of low among the band members, probably because they're trying to figure out what the hell they're supposed to be doing.
Because nobody knows why they're there.
But yes, Elwood, I mean, if he's just like, all right, fine, go home. Buster goes and gives him a pep talk. Remember this sink. We'll talk about it later. then they decide to go, he rallies the troop and decide to go off and, continue their mission. But that's when we get another cameo from the first one, Reverend Cleo Fitz, played again by James Brown, who I forgot was even alive when this movie came out.
Yeah, he definitely was alive, yeah.
He was. He was running on fumes, but he was alive.
Great singer, though.
Oh, phenomenal singer.
And he got the move, man. He got them those moves, man. Those feet, got them happy feet, man.
He did have the moves. Oh, yeah. So they're met by Cab, Curtis's son, Joe Morton, at this tent. And, we have our kind of, throwback to the original, the Do You See the Light scene. That one was playfully over the top. This one, all that goes out the window.
Yeah, this is like an acid trip where we're physically taking his character out of... out of the building, out of the tent,
and just transforming him midair and putting him back down.
That's a man of God, man. It's just, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, he finds his true calling, and he and Cab decides to join the band on their quest. And you know what? So watching this, I didn't realize Joe Morton could sing.
Yeah, he's actually a pretty good singer.
He's good.
And also has a son that is a Cyclops or Cyborg.
Oh yeah, he did give birth to Cyborg. Yes.
Yes, that's don't let them fool you.
Don't let them fool you. Don't believe the hype.
It's crazy how many movies he's been in.
And he's been in so much. He's a really good actor. I like him a lot.
Oh, a really good character actor that you just see in everything.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But anyways, they are going on their quest, and this is we thought we were in cartoon territory before. Oh God. No, that ain't even the worst of it. See, they're going to this new gig where they have to play for. I'm not making any of this up. They have to play for a 130-year-old voodoo witch played by Erykah Badu.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And you think, like, okay, maybe they just think she's a witch. Maybe, like, you know, she has a reputation for being that way. No, like, she, like, does, like, actual magic and shit.
Yeah, it's crazy how many. It is funny though how many singers and, you know, entertainers they got in this.
They did. We'll talk about the big one in a second.
Oh, the best one.
Yeah, the granddaddy of them all. But, like, yeah, yeah, they had this whole thing. They had this whole thing where, like, she wants to play, like, I think it was, like, Caribbean style inspired music. It's like, it's not a repertoire, but then, like, turns them into zombies.
Turns them into, like, Shreks. Aren't they green?
Yeah, I think they're supposed to be zombies, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they look like ogres.
They turn them into zombies, and they turn them into statues.
Which, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and she's putting on this whole battle of the bands, and this is what we're talking about. So the band they're going up against is the Louisiana Gator Boys. This is the mother of all cameos. Like, you look at how many absolute legends. Look, I can remember the Gasparum BB King's character. This is the band he went to form. And you want, like, just talk about how many fucking legends are in the scenes. Like, you already got BB King.
Yeah.
Aside from him, you got Lou Rawls, Paul Schaefer, Jimmy Vaughn, Grover Washington Jr., Isaac Hayes, Steve Winwood, Bo Diddley, like, Eric Clapton, so many. And, like, that's just a couple. There's so many amazing, amazing musicians in this one sequence.
It's Murderer's
Row. Dr. John. I forgot to him. Dr. John's in this sequence.
Yeah, it's like Murderer's Row of who's who in the blues.
In the world of, like, R&B blues.
R&B bluesy music, yeah.
But, like, yeah, like, this is, like, one of the few things that makes the movie worth it, because, like, seeing, like, all these people together, like, all the people, like, get to do a song, how blue can you get? Like, this is, it's honestly, it's kind of amazing to witness.
It really is. It's like a mini version of kind of like We Are the World type thing. I know it's not anywhere, like, but what I'm saying is just like a who's who of music. It's just like, if you love music and you appreciate the history of music, you appreciate what you see on the screen, you know? And it's just so funny because it doesn't look like Eric Clapton. I know it was Clapton when I saw it, though. I'm like,
it doesn't look like him.
He looks so young. But
yeah, I'm like you. I'm used to seeing old Eric Clapton.
Yeah, because I've seen old Eric Clapton for literally the last like 30 years. But then keep in mind, he had just got back in the charts with Change the World.
Oh, that's right.
Because Phenomenon just came out, I think, what, 96, I want to say, right?
Yeah.
So that's 2 years after that. So Clapton was still big. I mean, obviously.
Well, like, didn't Clapton rest, like, Tears from Heaven, that was him, right?
Tears from Heaven was him. Yeah, it was about his son.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. I mean, and then, but we're talking solo Clapton. We don't even forget Cream, you know what I mean, his band. It was funny. It's funny that we mentioned this because tickets literally just went on sale, or it was announced that in Pittsburgh in September, Clapton's going to be there.
Oh, really?
And I really want to go. If we're not doing anything, I know, because September's really packed with, like, my high school reunion. My stepdaughter Tage is getting married. If this is a weekend where we can be free here, I want to go see Clapton.
I would go see Clapton.
Oh, it's a legend, man. I mean, how do you not want to? Like, it's just ridiculous.
But yeah, again, kudos to them for putting all these amazing pieces together. Then we get, you know, the Blues Brothers are about to go up for their song. Obviously, you know, they're unfrozen. They get to do their thing. A song that has a very, very, very similar sound to Everybody Loves, Everybody Wants Somebody from the first movie.
Yeah.
Even has, like, the exact same, da, 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 da. Yeah, I'm like, okay, so you may as well have just done the exact same song.
Yeah, it's basically, hey, let's make a Lion King movie. Just shoot it the same way.
Just do the exact same thing.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, so it goes forward, and we get to the winner. We find out that no surprise to anybody, the Louisiana Gator Boys do end up winning. But they decide to come out with the Blues Brothers and do one big number all together. But before that. I forgot to mention the rednecks show up, the all right, what would we call them? Neo-Nazis, KKK, the Klan. I don't know. They never established who these guys are. But the they show guys. Up, and then the Queen Musette turns them into rats.
Because, sure.
Because she can. Because we care so little at this point.
Yeah, why don't you just disintegrate them?
Yeah, right.
I mean, if you're really...
But anyway, so the cops show up too because they still think Elwood kidnapped this kid. Yes. Even... And literally could very easily clear all this up. Yeah, he's just like, it's out of my hands. Can't really do anything.
He's like an orphan, though. Like, why does everybody care?
Well, no, here's my thing.
I'm not trying to be a dick. I'm just saying. You know?
I get it. Like, here's my thing. It's like, if I go with them, they're gonna put me back in the system. And I don't know about the family who doesn't love me. And like, you know, we're about to feel like Elwood and him have this like really tight, really unbreakable bond. Here's my issue. Remember how I mentioned the scene where like he stole the wallet and gave Elwood a pep talk?
Yeah.
It counts for like what, like a minute and a half of screen time?
Yeah.
Those are literally the only contributions this kid makes to the film.
Yeah. Yeah. Just taking a wallet.
Yeah. I'm like, sure he wears a suit. Sure, he's part of the band. Sure, he sings the song. Sure, he plays the harmonica. But as in terms of like character development, story, importance to the plot, relationship with the character of Elwood, he brings absolutely nothing to the table.
He's the reason for the car, Chance.
He's the reason for the car, but that's it.
I'm just saying.
I'm like, that's literally the only contribution he brings to the entire movie.
We didn't have the car, we wouldn't be doing all this.
You could have gotten the car in the other way, but that's the thing. You could have written this character out of the movie, and it'd be virtually no different.
You could have just stolen a car.
You could have just stolen the car. You're a criminal to steal the car.
Realistically, you know how to hotwire a car.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like a 2-hour movie, like two ten and change, if I'm not mistaken.
And it's two hours, like a
minute and a half worth of worth.
Yeah, none of this 145, 130 where it should be. It's like 205, 210.
It is. And but like, yeah, there's one thing. Like, this whole part was supposed to like push this like unbreakable bond. This bond that him and Elwood are supposed to have. You don't feel it because the kid is not interesting, and they don't. They can never to make him interesting.
I mean, it is a cute gesture at the end, though. I mean, I get it, but still, you know.
Oh, that was so. Yeah, the band continue to play on. Buster and Elwood escape, and look, I could forgive a lot of what this movie did if they gave us a climax, a really great kick-ass car chase climax.
Yeah,
you think they're teeing it up? And then the movie ends.
Yeah, it's just there. You have it.
And it's like I was confused because I'm just like the final car chase of the Blues Brothers is one of the funniest. It's one of the funniest car chases I've ever seen. Hell, I will say that Blues Brothers is the greatest car chase comedy ever made. Just like the amount of things they are able to do with cars and still make it funny. Still keep the energy and just keep one upping itself, I think is incredible.
Yeah.
Here, like it's the thing, like you have that, which is like this incredible car chase movie, and then you have Blues Brothers 2000, which hardly has any car chases.
Yeah, it's like a completely watered down, it's almost like a G-rated you know.
It may as well have been G-rated, honestly.
I mean, realistically, PG-13, I mean, just because you took the kid to the
strip club.
The strip club.
The only reason it made it PG-13.
There's your PG-13. This movie could be easily PG or G.
Honestly, it could. But, like, yeah, that's like the infuriating thing. It's like, you at least got to try. You at least got to try and recapture. Like, it's like, did you see the first movie that you supposedly made?
Yeah. And it's just... And like I said, you take Buster out, you make this movie rated R.
Exactly. Like make it rated R. Bring in the car chase and do some like really like fun, creative stuff. Hell, bring in planes, bring in boats. Do something else. Just like
you can even take the strip club scene out, man. Who cares? Like, but
anything
I'm saying,
but
you
this can... sad. But yeah, this is sad. But this it doesn't even end. The movie just straight up stops. It doesn't even end. It just stops dead in its tracks. Yeah. It's like, all right, we're good. Go home.
We did this. We're done.
But yeah, that was Blues Brothers 2000. So I know how I feel about this. But Russell, how do you, as someone who doesn't have a massive attachment to the first film, how do you feel about it?
I kind of was just kind of beat up on it pretty good. I don't know, just boring. It's 2 hours and 10 minutes. You feel the time drag in this film. There's just no cohesiveness to this film. It's like, kind of like I said, with the choreograph, like of the dancing, it's like a child came up with it, like a toddler. I do like the cameos from the different singers and songwriters and entertainers. I like that. I feel like we could utilize that a little bit better. I do like the ending. I think the ending's the best part, with obviously seeing BB King and Clapton and Winwood and all those guys. But overall, I just think it just falls flat. I just don't think it's a very, just not a very memorable movie. You have great talent associated with it, but you just don't utilize it. And the addition of the kid, like you said, it just doesn't, you don't need them. You don't need them in there. Why are we making this like a kid friendly type film when the first one was clearly anything but that? I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I am furious at this movie. I think this movie is horrendous. It feels like it's old and tired as its writer, director, and star. Again, it's not funny. It's not memorable. It plays more like a Blues Brothers Saturday morning cartoon than the first Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
But you know, I will give this movie one credit, in that the soundtrack is pretty great.
Oh, I like some of the music on it.
Full disclosure: I do own the soundtrack.
No, I like the soundtrack. I got nothing against it.
Yeah, the soundtrack is great. It's a lot of great renditions by a lot of great artists. Even the songs by our two leads are like the Ghost Riders in the Sky song. I think their most investment comes in the music, which is weird, because like it's kind of like the opposite of the first film. But it might be the only thing that does better than the original. I love the soundtrack of the original.
I think my favorite song is John the Revelator.
John the Revelator is a good one. I think I like the last one, New Orleans.
Okay.
But yeah, this movie just feels sad and desperate, and it just feels like a pointless ass comedy sequel. And again, trust me, comedy sequel, that's saying a lot.
Yeah, especially, yeah. Have you seen Dumb and Dumber 2?
Have you seen Weekend at Bernie's 2?
Have you seen Dumb and Dumber-er? Which isn't even a sequel, it's a prequel, but still.
No, that don't count. I had to think
about it for a second, but it's god awful too.
That one is really bad.
That is like horrendous bad.
Yeah, that one is really bad. That might be one of the worst prequels ever made.
We need to shit on that movie. We need to have like a fucking commentary on that one.
I mean, it's kind of like the same dynamic as this one, because like I'm not big on the first Dumb and Dumber either.
Oh, I love the first Dumb and Dumber's fan.
Yeah, that's like your kind of movie. But like, as much as I don't love the first Dumb and Dumber all that much. Like, I can't agree. Dumb and Dumber fucking sucks.
Oh my god, Dumb and Dumber 2 is stupid too.
Dumb and Dumber 2 wasn't. I mean, it wasn't great, but I also like. I don't think it's like that much worse than the first.
Yeah, but Dumb and Dumber. Oh, ugh.
Dumb and Dumber is legitimately fucking awful. Yeah, maybe we'll get to that one day.
We will. We'll shit all over that movie. Can't wait.
But that does bring us to the end of the show. Russell, our plugs before we head out.
Yeah, Notorious by Chance on Facebook. You can't get on that and vote yet, because we have some more surprises coming up. We have a couple more releases, and then we'll obviously get back into the polls to have you guys vote. Also, you can find us, Notorious by Chance, on YouTube.
And if I'm on Twitter, Instagram, @ChanceWars_91, check out our YouTube. We have the live show we do every week, and my football show, Left Side Strong Side, which me and Mike Deacon, sometimes Jacob Blunden, sometimes not Mike Deacon. We have a very circulating panel of guests where we come in and talk about everything going in the football season. And aside from that, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week for the concluding chapter of Movie March, where we'll give you a little hint. We are going to take to the sky, and I cannot wait to get the taste of this movie out of my mouth. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week.